Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 422. With me this week is Shahid Abdul-Hadi. How you doing, sir?
I am doing lovely because I saw one of the wrestlers I enjoy booing slip on a banana peel and just rain on his entire parade, and it couldn't happen to a better person.
I would have to say that if you are amongst those who cash in the Money in the Bank briefcase and lose, that is not a good thing for your future.
Yeah, and not only lose, but lose on a roll-up and not getting a single move. You remember we made the joke a long time ago, we had a show, imagine like when Seth Rollins was going to wrestle Brock Lesnar for the title, and imagine he pinned Brock for like a small package.
Oh, right.
It's hilarious because, like, Baron Corbin, the person I have no issue with, Baron Corbin, the character, I cannot stand. Like, I don't like anything about him. He's just this whole big, grouchy, dopey guy. Like, I've made the joke with a big cast, you're up in a poor neighborhood, with lead in his paint as a kid, he turned like Baron Corbin. That's what I think about Baron Corbin, just this big, balding, grouchy guy that talks great on Talking Smack and on podcasts, but talks like a robot when it's a microphone in his face. He wrestles okay, but he's not a great wrestler. He can hold his own, and he's basically getting a push because he's big. And usually when I'm watching him, he's beating up people that I like to actually watch.
Right.
So, and then the whole setup, because, you know, John Cena and Jinder Mahal have their match. It ends because, you know, Baron Corbin comes in. He beats up John Cena, and I'm talking to Jeremy, and Jeremy's like this dummy, like, Jinder's laid out while he cashing the briefcase. And he's walking halfway to the back, and then he decides, oh, well, I do have this briefcase. I might as well cash it in. Strolls his ass back down. They have the whole setup. And you're wondering what's going to happen because SummerSlam is Sunday. What I didn't expect, that I thought, like, you know, by the time he tried to cash it in, John Cena would get up and, like, fight, and then he wouldn't cash it in.
Oh.
I definitely expect for him to cash it in, John Cena strike him, and then get rolled up for a three count.
Yeah, I mean, when he, because I was thinking the same thing, I'm like, oh, why isn't he cashing it in right now? And then he goes back, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's smart. And I'm like, well, I guess I wouldn't have been completely shocked of John Cena being in the WWE Championship match at SummerSlam. You know?
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, well, this changes the dynamic of SummerSlam, but, like, it's not, like, they weren't going to take the title off of Brock Lesnar before SummerSlam on Raw.
Yeah. And it's just hilarious, the whole setup of the SmackDown main event is weird because, one, you know, Baron Corbin just always been that specter, kind of like, I got the briefcase, so, you know, soon, when he won the briefcase, it's always the assumption, like, 9 out of 10, that's going to be champion sooner or later. Yeah. And it's basically been his thing, it's kind of like, you know, he's been pestering Nakamura but not beating him. He wants to get respect from John Cena, but he's still bragging about, you know, I'm going to cash it in. And it's weird because, you know, he's a heel and Jinder's a heel. So, like that, I mean, heels have cashed in on heels before, but still a weird demographic and weird dynamic. Especially when it's like you got John Cena and Nakamura there, who you both rather see champion, even like John Cena part-time, than Baron Corbin. And I was wondering, like, what was the match from SummerSlam going to be about? I was like, you know, John Cena doesn't get anything out of beating Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin gets respect from beating John Cena, but his main thing is win the title. Now he got a damn grudge. It's like, you know, I had the title, and John Cena just pissed in my cornflake. I will say this. When that happened, he got rolled up, I laughed my ass off. Like, I laughed for like a good 15 seconds because of how absurd it was. Like, because it's kind of like you don't see that. And you can see, you know, if Jinder hit a move, or like Cena hit the attitude adjustment and then Jinder pinned him. But it was like, nope, he swung at Cena. And Jinder just had a match, a tough match with John Cena, and still rode him. Like, Baron Corbin ended up looking like a damn chump. And it was really his fault. He didn't have anybody to blame but himself.
Yeah, because he even clocked it, he even clocked John Cena again. Like, it wasn't like Cena got in an offensive move against him. Nah, man, he cold cocks Cena off the apron again. And then gets rolled up. So, yeah, like, it is really all on him.
If he would have just came in, beat up John Cena, and then cashed it in right there, he's champion. Instead, he beats up Cena. He brags about beating up Cena. He shows off the briefcase. He walks halfway up the ramp, and then he's like, "Oh, I do have this thing. Let me use it." It's like going to the strip club. You ready to get a lap dance? He's like, "Hold up, let me get my wallet," and then realize your wallet's in your pocket. By the time you come back, she's gone. Like, that's basically what happened with Baron Corbin. Except for that dancer's never coming back.
Oh, man. Yeah, it is kind of funny that you mentioned, though, him actually having a grudge. Like, I suppose, is there a possibility that that can finally make Baron Corbin interesting?
Baron Corbin's biggest thing is, it's like that SmackDown disconnect that some people have where they're better backstage than they are in the ring. Because, like, the one thing about what Talking Smack did, rest in peace Talking Smack, is that it gave people like Mike time to kind of show who they really are, give them confidence. And it helped when it was kind of like AJ Styles and the Usos and Alexa Bliss and Carmella, because it translated when they got to the ring. For Baron Corbin, it doesn't translate because he's just so, like, robotic when he talks like a... It's like a video game. Press X to say this threat. If John Cena does this, press circle. Like, he just talks like a robot, and it wasn't translating. Like, it's kind of like, just because they say he's a big deal doesn't make him a big deal. I didn't feel it. So if this gives him some fire and gets some pep in his step, it can definitely work because the... It's not one thing that work is kind of like the aggrieved heel, like the heel that feels like he's been screwed. We saw that, like, Edge is a perfect example of that. Like, once this whole thing is, I've been doing the right thing, I'm getting screwed by everybody, like, in real life and kayfabe, then you get kind of a booster in your seat. And beating John Cena, like, beating him badly, but definitely give him a boost if that's the route they go. Even though it's kind of like SummerSlam's been, this week's been weird because it's basically... It's changed the outlook of three matches between Raw and SmackDown and 205 Live.
Yeah, I mean, I there's not much more to say. So, I mean, do you want to start with the 205 Live one?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny where I did not expect Neville to lose on Raw. I didn't even expect that match. Although I can see the logic in this kind of like, it's a hot crowd, you give them more time, you make it feel more important, but it's like, it's, and they've done stuff like that before, have somebody lose the week before the pay-per-view, so it's not that unprecedented, but Neville's had the belt for 8 months, and he's basically more or less run over everybody for 8 months. Like, he's been beating people clean, he's been beating people kind of easily. Austin Aries gave him the most headache up until Tozawa. I mean, they've told a good story with Tozawa. People care about him. And they definitely care when he won. Like, I'm not watching 205 Live now, but I know they're talking about having a celebration. So it was a real good match. And it's funny where normally pay-per-views wins mean more because of pay-per-view. But more people watch Raw than pay-per-views. Like, more people probably watch that match than if they have that, like, in the pre-show. And it's, like, hour one.
Oh.
You know, it's like, does it really matter? Because I remember... Like, you know, they say once you're on a pay-per-view, you're on a pay-per-view. No. They can say it's six. They can say SummerSlam is 6 hours. It's four. Because most people don't pay attention to the pre-show.
Oh, like, yeah.
And if they put that match on the pre-show and he wins, it's kind of like, you know, if a tree falls and no one hears it, it doesn't make a sound.
I completely agree. Like, that's something that, like, usually a SummerSlam or any of these now that they do the extended pay-per-views, that first 2 hours or whatever... I might have it on, but it is definitely background noise to something else that I need to get done that day. Because the 6 hours is entirely too long to sit there consecutively in front of anything and watch it. in its entirety.
I don't know why they do that. I mean, I could see a free show, give people time to get their food, get settled and everything like that. An hour. That's really all you need. Especially if you're just going to have two matches. You can have them talk, have a match, have a 10-15 minute break, have another match, and then have time to get ready. Like they used to have. Like, you know, pre-show's an hour. You get your stuff in, boom. The fact that SummerSlam's already an extra hour, and now you're adding 2 hours, like, people sitting there, that just sucks up. I thought they would have learned their lesson from WrestleMania from doing that, where these 7 hour shows, it's like, by hour five, unless somebody brings out a gun, you're going to be kind of like, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter what type of match you have, because there is such a thing as too much wrestling, especially you're sitting there just watching on and on. And at least it's easier, like you said, you can have it on the background and not notice it. So that part doesn't affect us as far as watching, but it affects, like, the enjoyment of the show. Like, because a lot of the one thing about Raw that stood out was how hot the crowd is. It's hard for a crowd to be hot for 6 hours. I don't care how good a show you put on.
Yeah, and they were really hot for that. They were pretty hot for that match. Because that was the only thing, like, I like what they've, a lot of what they've done with Tozawa to help him out, but he didn't seem to get quite enough wins for me. Like, they focused more on the shoulder and him coming to Titus Worldwide more than, like, him kind of building to be a number one contender, too. That's why it was, to me, a little bit more of a surprise that match happened on Raw. Like, I guess I expected another somewhat easy win or something for Tozawa to keep on building up to his showdown with Neville. But
yeah, I agree.
You know, it's still, like you said, like, I do think that, I guess in the long run, it is better to see that on Raw than the chance that I'm doing dishes while it's on hour one of the pay-per-view.
Also true. And kudos to Tozawa. And it's funny where that's another thing that it was kind of played for last, like the Titus Worldwide thing. Because remember, that started when him interact with the New Day. And it was just played off as a joke. And then he got that with Apollo Crews, and it's kind of like, does Apollo Crews really want to be there and everything like that? And then it went to, like, Apollo Crews is getting into it, and it was almost, like, heelish. And then they recruit Tozawa, and it's, like, the same thing. Like, Tozawa's like, what in the world is going on with this? And they just kept going with it and going with it. It helps that Crews and Tozawa are, like, best friends in real life, so they definitely have chemistry. It also helps that they treat Tozawa like a human being and not like a six-year-old like they used to treat the Jerry and every other Japanese wrestler until recently. So it's like they let him speak English. They made him seem like a big deal. They gave him time on Raw and 205 Live. And one thing we've always said about wrestling, if you can chant something or have a catchphrase, that's 50% of it. It is him just shouting, ha! Work because people got into it. People know, like, oh, that's Akira Tozawa. I know he puts on good matches, and I can shout hot with him. Like, wrestling fans love chant. And it doesn't matter what they chant. So, and it brought the thing out of Neville because, like, Neville, for the most part, up until the Tozawa feud, was just like, you know, I'm the king, bow down to the king, kiss the ring, like, being like a dick that was just beating people. And then this one is, like, kind of smarmy where it's like he's blame thing and Titus taking advantage of Tozawa. He's trying to, like, sow seed the scent because it's like he doesn't. That's the first person that he kind of had doubts with since Austin Aries, and he was basically trying to say, like, you know, you're being greedy. If he really cared about you, he wouldn't try to have you wrestle with that bad shoulder. Or why are you wrestling the far you already won? Like, if I were you, I'd watch my. But like little stuff like that, kind of like, you know, just adding to it. And the whole shoulder thing has worked because it's like Titus is trying to protect him, long-term stuff, looking out for his interests. And yeah. Tozawa's like the fighting guy, like, I want to fight, you hold me back. And it's perfect because it's like Titus is doing the right thing by looking out for his man because that's his friend and looking for, like, good business. And then it's that whole dumb wrestling thing, I don't care if I'm injured, I'm going to fight, even though they have sick days for a reason. But it worked out, so...
Yeah. I mean, it did get across, like you said, they allowed him to speak English. Like, it allowed him to get himself over as, and everybody loves a tough guy. Play through the pain, man. Just do it.
Yeah, put some ice on it. And it's a funny thing, but
put some ice on it. We know it might cause you CTE, but just put some ice on it and get the fuck back out there.
Oh, it's just, you just got your bell rung. You don't worry about when you're 60 years old and you get lost like Bobby Eaton, like we'll be here to talk about on Twitter. So, but yeah, it was funny. Like, Raw had that match, and then the Finn Balor Bray Wyatt match was at first where it's like, that whole feud's been dumb. I'll be honest.
Oh.
Like, it's basically been two guys using magic against each other. And Bray Wyatt, he's always been doing that. Finn, that's part of his character, but that's part of his character when he's wearing his face paint and doing the whole demon stuff. Not when he's come out with a leather jacket looking like a pervert. Like, him doing that just teleporting, it seems dumb. Like, okay, Fonzie has magic. I always felt that way when he's out there wrestling. Well, I don't know what's the look. It just reminds me of, like, Alex Wright having a big leather jacket and just boots and tights just looks creepy.
I have thought about Alex Wright on more than one occasion while seeing the whole leather jacket cool version of Finn Balor here. And, well... Yeah, you heard my beef about it. Is they kind of played it up like, I know that Balor's been the demon on Raw TV before, but it's been a long time, so they kind of played this up like it was going to be a secret thing, but then they just showed the damn graphic of it, and I'm like, huh, then why did you play, like, I guess I don't understand why you'd play it that way, like it was some big thing, because him losing to Wyatt is part of the reason for this to happen. Like, the win by Wyatt makes some more sense, I suppose, like, just because Wyatt still is kind of had a rough, well, I always feel like it's been a rough run for him is a heel, despite the fact that he's repeatedly put in huge feuds. That's the only thing not bad about his situation.
Yeah, it's a two-part thing. So the part with Bray Wyatt is kind of like, it's the same old song, no matter who he feuds with. He comes out, he talks about serpents and evil worlds and breaking the spirit of man and being a cult icon and yada, yada, yada. And then he'll have a mediocre to above-average match. I mean, we've been seeing this for years. Like, it's kind of like, it's... when you do it with Undertaker, it's cool. It's like, he did it with Dean Ambrose. Like, half the time, it's kind of like, either he's doing with people that's just as weird as him, like The Undertaker or Randy Orton or Finn Balor, or he's doing with everybody else that's looking at him like a lunatic. Like, that whole feud with Dean Ambrose, Dean is like, what the hell is going on? Like, I'm just here to wrestle. So... And I was laughing when they talking about the whole thing. They don't describe, like, it's a viscous, acidic flow. I'm like, did he got spit on by a raptor? Like, is he trying to eat Finn Balor? Like, is that stomach acid a reddish, viscous? If that stuff was acidic, Finn Balor would be dead.
So, yeah, if he weren't dead, it would at least, cause harm to his skin.
Yeah, he looked like Two-Face, basically. he'd really be the demon. So, and I know, whenever they do that supernatural stuff, and kudos to The Undertaker and Kane, whenever anybody else does it, it looks goofy. It just looks, I mean, it's no way getting around it. You see some skinny guy that weighs like a buck 70 with some slop, some Nickelodeon slop on him. There's no way to make that look dangerous. So,
I was gonna say, his paint jobs aren't Nickelodeon slop, but the red viscous fluid was definitely Double Dare worthy.
Yeah, and you were talking about why they mentioned that, that he's talking about being a demon, then they mentioned it. It's kind of like a lot of times they don't trust their fan base to pick up on stuff, so they have to reinforce it. And I can't get on too much because when Paul Heyman later on was talking about, you know, if Brock loses, they'll have to lock him in a cage, hint, hint. And nobody, like, nobody in the crowd mentioned anything. It's like he's basically saying without saying, if I lose, I'm going to UFC. And he might as well say, if I lose, we're going to get groceries, by the way the crowd acted. It's like sometimes you have to beat, and there's a reason they do it that way. It's like it's easy for us to pick it up because we know better. But everybody doesn't know better.
Yeah. I guess I forget about that from time to time. But, I mean, at least that crowd was kind of weird on Monday. Because there were some times where they were really hot, and there were other times where I was kind of surprised by their silence. Like, Braun Strowman was one that I'm like, man, there hasn't been a hotter guy, I don't think, in wrestling recently. And Boston seemed like they could have given a shit less about him.
Yeah, because you know why? Because the only person that might have been as hot as him is Samoa Joe. And they're in the same, and they're in the same match. And it's kind of like weird where Braun Strowman is still hot, but Samoa Joe is kind of overshadowing him in this. Everybody's booing Roman Reigns because it's cool to hate Roman Reigns, and like Brock is Brock Lesnar. Like this is a weird dynamic where there's no really true baby. Like the one true babyface is the most hated guy.
Yeah.
The main heel is probably the most beloved guy. Everybody likes Brock Lesnar and everybody likes Braun Strowman, but Brock is probably neutral. If you want to classify him, I'm probably like a tweeners. Like, you know, I fight who I fight. Cheer or boo, it doesn't matter. Like, people tend to cheer him because he's a badass, but they'll boo him if he's fighting somebody they like more.
Right.
And it's just weird where you don't have those. And, like, I can't remember the last time you had a match like that where you don't really have a traditional good guy that people get behind. So that's one thing that's kind of messed up the dynamic. And then the other thing with the crowd is kind of like, yeah, when they liked something, they loved it. Like, they hated Big Cass to the point where I was like, wow, I was not expecting that. And kudos to him, he was feeding into it. It's like some old Shawn Michaels in Montreal type beat where they just kept going and going. He's feeding into it. And yeah, it's hard. I don't know how to fan of Big Cass. It's hard not rooting for him because everything he said was right on Monday. And that's a problem.
Yeah, that I was thinking something similar. I'm like, what is he saying wrong here? Like, that's the only thing I'm thinking to myself. You know, because they're never going to put, because, and I mean, it's going to get borne out too, because there's no way they're going to give Enzo a singles run. Like, even if he doesn't stick with Big Show, there is no way that guy is ever going to be a big-time singles wrestler.
Yeah, we've talked about, you can't be small and can't wrestle.
Oh.
Not in WWE. Like, you can be big and can't wrestle, and you can be small if you're a good wrestler. But if you're small and you can't wrestle, that's an issue. Like, there's no place for you. Like, it's funny where you look at someone like Xavier Woods, and you never thought about him being a wrestler. And then you see him, like, actually, Russell's like, one, he's probably, what, 15, 20 pounds bigger, at least, than Enzo. And you see Xavier, Russell's like, he can wrestle, they just didn't give him a chance to. So, yeah, it's like, these small guys like Chad Gable and Finn Balor just doing what they do, and then you see Enzo, like, Enzo's great till the bell rings. And, like, Kaz was right, it's kind of like, you know, you were on my coat straps, and we never did anything together, and you need to get the Big Show to beat me, and the Big Show's only there so he can be relevant, because who cares about the old ass Big Show? And it's like, he has not lied yet. But it's a thing where they like Enzo a lot. The crowd likes him. He's easy to root behind. But it gets old seeing him get beat up every week. each and every week he's going in there, he's talking a good game. No, sometimes he talks a good game, sometimes he it's, and it's also hard where he's supposed to be the hero, and his heroic thing is, I'm going to get somebody bigger than my than the guy I can't beat to beat you up. It's like, you getting a bigger bully to beat up the town bully doesn't make you a hero, it just makes you smart. But it's still kind of like, yeah. I guess. Like, I would want somebody to be smart enough to do that, but I wouldn't necessarily, like, cheer that in a wrestling match.
Yeah, it's... He's just in a weird spot, you know, and I think I've talked about everyone about it at this point. Everyone being also Jeremy and Chris, that it's evident that they have utter faith in his mic time, because he cuts a promo each and every week, and it's just kind of odd that, they don't believe in a manager outside of Paul Heyman. Like, Enzo just seems like the perfect person to just not have to worry about in the ring. And just put in that type of a role. And, because it took them, well, and we already talked about him, actually. It took them a while with Titus O'Neil. Like, he was big and not good, but eventually, I just feel like they've kind of pulled the plug on that with his, I don't know, you just want to call him an agent at this point. Although, I don't feel like they've attached a name to him.
True, and it's also funny where he's bigger than everybody he manages.
Oh.
I mean, that's also a funny thing, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Colonel Rob Parker, like, I remember Colonel Rob Parker being big, but it's like, you notice it when he's with Jeff Jarrett, but then when he's with Harlem Heat, it's kind of like, well, Harlem Heat's big enough where you can get over that. Him being, like, him towering over Apollo Crews and Tozawa is noticeable because neither one of them are tall, and Titus is tall. So, but it works because he can look imposing. Enzo's best thing, like, if they should just have him be a manager and a mouthpiece, but they don't do babyface man. They don't do managers anyway, and especially, like, babyface ones.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's funny, like, when they've done it, it's worked, and then it's like, I don't want to do, like, they didn't, the whole thing with Umaga and Armando Estrada, they did that, and then it worked too well, and it's like, we gotta nip this in the bud. And then Alberto Del Rio and his manager, and that worked, and it's like, oh, we gotta nip this in the bud. It's like, you do it when you don't want to, and then it works, and then you're like, well, I don't really want to do it. And it's kind of weird where you have managers in the Hall of Fame and you talk about how important they are, but now you're so anti-manager, even though the few times you do it always works. Like, Brock Lesnar's walking around with Paul Heyman, but you're trying to tell me you don't want people to have managers? The world champ has a manager, and he does a great job each time he talks. Titus O'Neil is one of the main reasons Akira Tozawa is over the way he is. And whatever's going on with, like, Lana and Tamina's, like, yeah, because even, like, Lana's a good example. She was basically Rusev's manager. She helped Rusev get over, and it's like, oh, okay, that's enough of that. We want to have her do something else. Like, if it ain't broke, don't break it. Stop breaking stuff that's not broken.
Well, and that was actually something, not that we need to have a long conversation about it, but I thought that was one of the better parts, or at least a good part about SmackDown. I'm like, oh, they're putting Lana back in her manager role. Great. You know, because even if she wants to be a wrestler, it would seem to me that she needs a little more time in training before that really is a good idea.
Yeah, it's part of me that thinks that the only reason she's wrestling is to hide so Carmella won't be the worst wrestler on SmackDown as far as the women goes. And that's something kind of like, I don't know if I ever talked to you about that. I remember the big deal people were making when she won the briefcase because they're like, you know, James Ellsworth helped her win and how sexist it looked. And like, what does that say when the first woman's Money in the Bank is won that a man literally handed to her? And my whole thing is like, we just ignore the fact that out of the women wrestling, she was the worst wrestler by far in that match. And if you're going to have her win, that's the only way it's believable she won, unless five of them are climbing the ladder. She pushes off because, like, she can't hang with none of them. And she got over basically by personality and talking. Like, no offense to her, it's not ring skills. And it's weird where we talk about ring skills now, especially with the women, how important it is and how you need to make that a priority. But Carmella's like letting it slide because she looks cute and talk, and it's easy to hate James Ellsworth. So it's funny where we care about stuff until we don't care about it.
Yeah, I guess she's passable enough for me, but she is clearly inferior to everyone else that was in that match. At least her chance at Money in the Bank is still alive.
Mm-hmm. And I could see her cashing in at SummerSlam, out of definitely, because it's funny where the Taya, like, Naomi match, it's not a lot. I mean, they've had matches before, but it's not like a lot of stuff between them. It's kind of like, you know, Natalya won the match, so she's the number one contender, and she's a heart, blah, blah, blah. She's like, she has enough credibility just from being who she is, so the match would be fine. But it's not like a lot of heat behind the match, but it's kind of hard where they're not going to do Tamina because they don't think Tamina's ready or people care about that. Charlotte is in this whole, I'm not really a baby face, but I guess I am. Like, I still want the title, but I'll hang with my friends. And by friends, it's basically Becky Lynch. And, like, Becky Lynch is, I don't think they want to do face versus face because it's like, they want to say that for whatever reason. So Naomi doesn't really have a lot of challengers.
Nope.
So, and then it's like, that's why people, like, the whole, why Lana kept getting matches, like, well, who else is she going to fight? You really, like heel-wise, like, who is she going to beat, like, unless you want her beating Tamina every week?
Yeah, they clearly don't, because they have not gone to that match at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about how many baby faces they have over there. Honestly, that certainly is part of the problem.
Yeah, it's the whole dynamic has been weird since they've done like the brand lottery or whatever. It's kind of like they have a relatively equal number of heels and faces, but they have more good wrestlers that are faces than their heels. Where you have Naomi, you have Becky Lynch, and you have Charlotte on the face side. They can all wrestle, like, very well. But then on the heels, you have, like, Natalya, you got Lana, you got Carmella and Tamina. It's like, Tamina's okay, but she's been around so long, people don't care about her. Natalya can wrestle, but Lana and Carmella can't. And then you got one, and then Carmella has the briefcase. And you got Natalya, and you have Naomi as the champ, where it's like, you have to have matches each week, and you don't want Charlotte losing, and you don't want Becky Lynch losing, but neither one of them are champs. Yeah, it creates a problem where it's like, we need to protect three people. We need to protect all our baby faces, and we can't just have them beating the only heel that matters, so what are we going to do?
Oh, man. Yeah, that is, I could not describe it more accurately if I tried to.
Yeah, but it's speaking of women, how many times did you cringe watching that Sasha Banks Nia Jax match?
At least twice. Because definitely, and I'm trying to think of what happened before the baseball swing into the barricade is really sticking out to me.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, that was definitely one. I think the match first started, she ran her over.
Oh, yeah, it was just that one. Oh, my gosh, that was... You don't see someone get smashed into the ropes that way too often. Like, it's usually into the corner if something like that happens. So it's kind of an odd situation that happened fully, like, right in the middle of the ropes.
Yeah, if you ever wonder how Vader would be if he really wanted to wrestle stiff, just watch Nia Jax. It's like, I don't even blame her because she's young and she's like inexperienced, but they need to do something with that. Like, she is dangerous. And not like, oh, a dangerous, like, ha-ha, dangerous. Like, dangerous, like, she can really hurt somebody kind of easy, you know, and it wouldn't be that much of a challenge. Because, like, she's big and she moves fast, but she's sloppy. It's a bad combination. Like, I'm surprised Dana Brooke didn't die from that clothesline she hit with him. And it doesn't help that Sasha Banks is probably, like, a buck 15 soaking wet. And whenever she takes bumps, it looks like she's about to die anyway. But when she swung, when Nia swung her like a baseball bat, I was like, you keep thinking, like, Sasha, you keep watching Sasha Banks, like, I hope she makes it to 30. Because the way she wrestles and how small she is, yeah, it's like that looks very painful. And whenever Nia Jax wrestles somebody, it looks painful. And she's wrestling all these small people. Like, even like Dana Brooke's not Dainty or anything like that, but she might as well be when Nia just running her over. Like, yeah, I'm a Larry at the top of your skull off. Just, like,
yeah. The only people that are even close to her size-wise, well, Charlotte is at least somewhat the same height. And that's really about it, you know?
Yeah, like everyone, Tamina might be the closest, and even then, just to put in perspective, if China showed up, she would outweigh China by like 75 pounds. China would outweigh everybody, would outweigh all those other women by between 60 and 90 pounds. Yeah. It's kind of like, you just think about think about how China was just, how bigger than every other woman to the point where they had her wrestle men, because like, you couldn't see another woman beating China.
Right.
And China would be small next to Nia Jax. It's like, Nia Jax's whole thing is like, the excuse they have with her is kind of like, she either beats herself or she's inexperienced. Oh. That's been the two things.
She's run into more pos than any person on the WWE roster in the past calendar year.
Wile E. Coyote. Watch out for that wall. You know, those walls move fast. Like, she runs into the walls and posts and she trips herself up. It's funny the way how absurd it is, because it's kind of like, that's the only way it looks credible for her to lose.
Yeah.
But after a while, it's kind of like, okay, she's an idiot. Like, how many times you'll keep running into a wall, Wile E. Coyote? Like, you haven't learned yet?
You should not trust Acme products.
So, I mean, it was a good setup, and the fact that they had to have Sasha win, let her win in her hometown, because normally you do not win in your hometown for whatever reason. It's kind of like Vince McMahon doesn't like good. He doesn't like people to be happy. It says a lot about how he grew up as a child. So, yeah, it helps because they have, like, Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks have a built-in feud. Apparently, they don't like each other in real life for whatever reason. And it definitely helps. Like, they can. It's funny where, I don't know, like, Alexa Bliss is, like, hit or miss when it comes to the ring. Like, some people she has good matches with and some people she don't. I can see them having a good match. I can see them having given time to have a match. And it's weird where it's kind of like, it should be Bayley, but they didn't do Bayley any favors. I know Bayley's been talking about wanting to be heel. I think Sasha, the problem is, it's kind of like, they have the reverse problem that SmackDown has, where they have a lot of people who are better off being heels, but they can't have everyone be heel. Like, Alexa Bliss is a natural heel. Sasha Banks should be a heel, but she's so popular the crowd won't boo her. Nia's a heel. Mickie James works better as a heel. Alicia Fox is not sympathetic whatsoever. Neither is Emma. And, like, Dana Brooke as a babyface is just bland. Like, the most personality she shows is when she's trying to get recruited by Titus O'Neil on WWE.com, which you never see unless your phone gives you an alert. So, their whole thing is kind of like they don't have enough baby faces, and they slaughtered Billy's character. They made her look like a damn chump.
Dana Brooke is a baby face. Is just that it's been one of the worst things to witness. And that's why I'm like, oh, she could really use a rehab with Titus O'Neil. Like, when I first saw that floated on the internet, I'm like, oh, this should work out. But it has not been on TV at all. Because that was one of those things that it was on Raw this week where Mickie James and Emma had a skit. And I'm just like, why didn't more of this happen? Or, you know, like, why is this happening just the week before SummerSlam? Like,
I think it's a test run thing. They tend to do that a lot, where it's like something they're not sure, like they want to do, but they're not 100% sure. They'll do like some network stuff, or they'll do WWE.com stuff, and then it's kind of like, you know, you start talking about it, and enough people talk about it and start caring about it, and they show on TV, and I mean, it's kind of like, you know, a slow build type thing, and with the network and stuff and the internet being a bigger thing, you can do that and let it grow organically. Like, considering how Brizango has become one of the most popular things in WWE, I don't mind a slow build. I know we're kind of jumping around. I have no clue how that's working. And it's amazing that they're doing live skits in front of a live audience. The crowd pops when it happens. They cheer and pop when it ends. Like, and it's not like an easy thing to follow. Like, Twin Peaks is a weird show from everything I've heard. WWE trying to emulate weird. It, it's kind of like, how would you even explain that to Vince McMahon?
I don't know. It's one of those things that I guess, just because of the weirdness of that, like, there isn't kind of like a straight ahead humor or anything that can be drawn out of that. Well, like, I guess I don't know how you describe that to someone to kind of find humor in it. Just because it is that goddamn weird. Like, I like it because it's that weird, but it's not really easily describable. And they've done a good job of turning it into something amusing.
Yeah. I think it helps where it actually fits their character, because, like, Fandango is like a mimbo, but it's kind of like he's a self-aware mimbo that kind of plays it straight. Tyler Breeze is like the MVP of acting. Like, he's found his niche. He's amazing. Like, being a straight man, it's funny where he's the pseudo straight man to Fandango's mimbo straight man. And they have, like, little clues and stuff, like, you know, when you see the background, and they have, what was it, the doppelgangers or something like that, the Flash, and they had the fake Razor Ramon and fake Diesel on there, on a cork board. Like, they had little stuff where it's kind of like, if you're paying attention, you see Easter eggs and stuff, and I never thought I'd care about seeing Ascension. So the fact that they made you actually care about them, even if it's like a throwaway thing, it's like, kudos to them. And it works, because when they have matches, people care about the matches. I still laugh that match they have with the Usos, with one, the whole stuff with the mop, and then two, him dressing up like an old woman and throwing a drop kick. Like, that match needs to be like the best on some of my Blu-ray, because that match had no business being as entertaining as it was, and it was a great-ass match. And the fact, like, you know, they hold the whole thing, we'll come back in 25 years. And then they race as they come back in two weeks. And the crowd start cheering. It's like, people care about them.
Yeah.
And they have no business caring about them. They're just entertaining. Like, it worked. And it's amazing how American Alpha, these two great wrestlers, and they couldn't get over. Brizango, these two goofballs that's doing these weird abstract skits, and they got over.
Well, that was something that, I guess, in NXT, to me, American Alpha, them, Gable recruiting Jordan to be his partner, those are some pretty funny skits, and they didn't really have anything, like, once you're a team, like, you can't have that team-building experience again. unless they had brought them up separately and then reunited them on SmackDown, which would have been really strange.
I think their biggest issue was they kind of took them for granted. They made the assumption that, you know, they're a great wrestling team that's a big deal in NXT, so when they come to SmackDown, SmackDown's a wrestling show, that's all we need to do. And they always say, oh, this is an NXT team, they're great. It's like, they're great because people tell us we're great, not because they didn't say they have great matches. Because at first it was they didn't have any teams to wrestle. And then finally wrestled and beat the Wyatt, and it's kind of thinking, okay, maybe this is their thing. But it didn't help that the Usos were just so damn entertaining. And it's like, I know the Usos were supposed to be heels, but they did to American Alpha with the New Day did to the Usos like a couple of years ago. Like, it's hard. Yeah. It's hard where
perfect description.
And you're more popular than the babyface team you're fighting. Like, you're going to down the vine. And that's what happens to American Alpha. It's like, okay, what we know about them? They can wrestle great. Chad Gable was in the Olympics. Jason Jordan can wrestle. And that's it. They didn't get any mic time. When they did, they came off as like, you know, if the Steiner brothers went to Stanford instead of Michigan. Like, these two little prissy pricks. Like, they came off as like dick. They didn't try to. They came off as dickheads and a lot of, oh, look at the Usos. I guess they're taking it to their streets. We better be ready. Like, laughing it off or like that. And Usos were coming and beating their asses. And just like, I'm gonna cheer the cool ass Usos than these two assholes who just do suplexes.
Yeah, and think they're better than everyone just because. They really did not have a good game plan with American Alpha when they brought up when they brought them up. There are any probably number of ways they could have gone with them, and they didn't go to any of the good ones.
That's been a thing with NXT. With NXT guys, it's like some of them have had plans, and the other ones kind of like, oh, they were important in NXT. You guys like NXT? Why don't you get this now? It's like, okay, like Ty Dillinger, The Ascension, The Vaudevillains. It's like, it's a whole lot of them they just brought over, and it's assumed it's going to work. You got to make it work. Like, Kevin Owens worked because they made him seem like a big deal when he came. Like, they put him in with John Cena. His first match, he beat John Cena. Like, it's funny you think about Sami Zayn now, but they made Sami Zayn seem like a big deal. Finn Balor won the title in a month when he first came. Like, when they push you, then you're important. Then you just can't put someone on the show and say, oh, here he is, show him around.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't even need to go that big for the wins. Just have them go on a win streak of any sort. Like, have them start at the bottom of the food chain and move up. But, that really didn't. It kind of happened because I feel like they wrestled the Colognes or something at some point, but, you know, there's only so much you can do, at least in the tag team division, without winning the titles there to be known as important.
Yeah, and it didn't help that they were doing their thing at the same time. It was the whole Heath Slater Rhino story. And it's kind of like, that was an unexpected thing where, you know, he just wants to buy a pool and a double wide for his family. And somehow the crowd got behind that. They became champions. And it was like, I don't know. It was like they were placeholder champions. So they got their spot. Then the Usos are there. And then American Alpha is like, it's kind of like, who's American Alpha going to wrestle? And then you had the whole thing with the Wyatts getting the tag team belts. And it was like, you had all these other teams getting stuff. And by the time American Alpha got it, other teams were more important. So, yeah, the moral story is, if you want somebody to seem important, treat them
like as being important.
And you think they learned a lesson considering Braun Strowman is where he is because they did that with him week in and week out. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those great mysteries. Like, it's just like, how did all this go right? But this is so horribly wrong.
Yeah, such as, you know, and it's funny where when they get it right, it's all the way right. Like the stuff with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, like they timed and planned that perfectly from start to finish. And normally it's the kind of thing where, and I think part of it helped where the time frame forced them to do it that way. Because they had to do it, because like SummerSlam is Sunday. And this was the week you had to cash it in. And it helped that it was a hot crowd. It helped that they wanted to, the crowd wanted to happen. And that's the first time they've cared about both of them in a long time. Like, they've been, like, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose have been kind of like treading water, spinning their wheels. It's kind of like, you know, we know they're, it's funny, like, they're two world champions. We know they're important, but it just seemed like we both talked about it where they're kind of there, and it doesn't help that the main event has all these big guys who they really couldn't wrestle with. So it's like, what do you do with them?
And it's, well, both Rollins and Ambrose to me are at least in somewhat of a little different spot, just because Ambrose started off good as a babyface and has just kind of slowly devolved. And Seth Rollins was finally, to me, starting to find some traction with the crowd as a babyface. And then they threw this in there, and hopefully both of them come out of it for the better. I mean, that crowd, and maybe that was part of the problem, since that was the very first thing on Raw, and people went bonkers for them when they finally put their fists together. And they were hot for the whole segment, honestly.
Yeah, so, like, people wanted to see, like, people liked them, and they liked the Shield, and of course, it leaves the elephant in the room. Like, okay, you got two of them together. If Roman Reigns ain't winning Sunday, then he had, what's his excuse? They're gonna be looking at him like, you want people to like Roman Reigns again? Then you have an avenue to do that. So
yeah,
I don't know if they're gonna necessarily take that or not. Because I got the feeling they've dropped enough clues. I'm assuming that Brock wins on Sunday. Because I'm thinking what happens is he wins and his feud is going to be with Braun Strowman. So if that's going to happen, I can easily see Joe being with like Cesaro and Sheamus. And then if you're going to have like a 3-on-3, there you go. Put this, like, you know. But I don't know if they've been talking about putting the Shield back together. I always thought they broke up too soon. I'm wondering if they're saving them all three to be together for like Survivor Series or Royal Rumble or something big. But sooner or later, it's like you got all three of them on the same show and they're all baby faces. So I mean, it kind of like, if you're gonna do it, you don't have to like twist your logic too much to do it. Like they've given you an avenue to do it.
Well, and I feel like part of it was Ambrose being shipped to SmackDown, but I mean, I do feel like, and they haven't mentioned it too much, but Rollins and Reigns somewhat made peace with each other. I feel like they've had a match or two as a team ever since Rollins turned face. I can't really recall it, but I feel like they've had some type of interaction at least.
Yeah, they've had matches together as a team, and they kind of like, oh, former Shield members, but they didn't beat you over the head like they did with Ambrose and Rollins. And it was kind of like that was the bigger thing, because it's kind of like when the whole setup happened, it seemed like the Rollins and Ambrose one hurt more than when Rollins turned on like Reigns.
Yeah, and they certainly did emphasize the fact that Rollins hit Ambrose with the chair first. Although, because Ambrose was the U.S. champion, and Reigns and Rollins were the tag champs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of funny that, I guess Rollins really kind of wasn't, I was going to say he wasn't the leader, but they always mentioned that no one was really the leader. Even though Ambrose was more of the spokesperson than
they always said, like Rollins was kind of like the architect, like he holds the team. Like it was basically, you know, Ambrose was the Joker. Reigns was the solid muscle, and Rollins was the architect. He held the team together. He was like the coach, and they made a big deal. And it's funny when, even now they push him, like when the Shield started, everyone assumed that Ambrose was going to be the big star of the three when they go singles. And then it became like, you know, Roman Reigns is like Diesel 2.0 or like The Rock 2.0. Like, he's this big badass everybody got behind.
Yeah.
Not forgetting the fact that, like, Rollins is just a world-class wrestler. And nobody would expect it. Like, I don't think people would expect him to be as good as he was as a heel. Because he, hyperbole aside, probably the best pure heel since, like, Edge. Like, it's just being booed and always being booed. Like, being an entertaining heel that you didn't cheer, but you just respected because he was just so good as a heel. And, like, having great matches after great match after great match. Like, yeah, he was a throwback heel. So, like, him being babyface seemed weird because he was such an effective heel. It helped that, you know, his hair is one color now. And then it also helps he's not threatening to have a home invasion at Triple H's house and, like, kidnap his kids. So
That is a gigantic help, I would have to say. Because they played him bad as a babyface from the get-go. Because he was another one that had that Randy Orton, like, oh, come back into the fold. Oh, now leave a month after you returned from an injury. Huh? This would have worked much better if you would have just done this upon return from the injury. And yeah, everyone wants to cheer, like, 95% of the people that come back from an injury.
Yeah, and it's kind of like they know better. Like, when Triple H came back from his injury, they didn't have him come back and then give, like, a babyface a pedigree. He was a babyface, and Triple H was the most hated. Him and Austin was the most hated men in wrestling when he got hurt. But it's like, people like cheering you when you come back. It's like, especially if you're good. If you're bad, no one cares. But normally when you're no matter if you come back from a serious injury, you're gonna get that sympathy. And they could have played it up, but they didn't for whatever reason. Because, like, you know, they had their reasons, and now it helps that, you know, they have I don't know. I wonder if they win the titles or not. Because, like, Sheamus and Cesaro just got up back. They're a great tag team. It's easy to boo both of them. But it seems like you don't make this big a deal to have them together. Like, or have Ambrose and Rollins reunite. And then their first match as a tag team, they lose.
Yeah, that's the one thing I keep on going back to. I'm like, you can't really have these guys lose, right? Because there's no one that's really going to interfere on the behalf of Sheamus and Cesaro. And I guess they could bring someone on board, but that would seem kind of strange at this point.
Yeah, like, Wade Barrett's not walking through that door. Yeah, it's
League,
like,
of Nations 2.0.
Yeah, like, if you don't put them together and then have them lose. Like, it's like when the Hardys came back. Imagine the Hardys come back in that match for the titles at WrestleMania and then lost. Like, can you imagine, like, the crowd? The crowd would have mutinied. Like, yeah, like,
crowd would have checked out right there.
So, I expect them to win the titles and then go from there. They can have great matches and everything like that. And it's enough heel teams where they can have good matches for a while. Because even with the Revival being snake bit as hell, being out again, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see Sheamus as Cesaro. Unless it's some, and I hope it's not done, some DQ nonsense.
Oh.
The only way I can see them, like, yeah, I hope they don't do that. Because that would seem so anticlimactic. And them Brooklyn hipster dickheads would crap all over that finish if they tried that.
Oh, man. Yeah, I that was one that it was kind of funny. My wife asked me whether I had been to SummerSlam previously. And knowing that it's going to be in the hipster capital of the U.S., I suppose it did kind of pass through my mind. I'm like, well, We're gonna do it again there. It's not that far of a trip. It's definitely one that I haven't seen yet, and they're making a big deal out of it. I mean, hence that's why we have 6 hours of television on Sunday to not actually watch.
Yeah, basically, it's kind of like this. SummerSlam has become the WrestleMania of the summertime. So, and also, because remember, for a long time, it was in Los Angeles. And they built up as like being a Hollywood thing, anything like that. And then they moved to Brooklyn. And now it's like, you know, Mania East on like a smaller scale and stuff. And especially it helps where NXT TakeOver like kind of blew up in Brooklyn too. And I know they're hyping up this year. It's like, you know, it's their biggest one ever. They're having a lot of NXT alums coming. So, yeah. But at the same time, it's like, I hate those type of crowds. Those too cool for school, too smart and snarky, like that just, I love passionate crowds, I love smart crowds. I'm mini Dave Meltzer type crowds, I hate those with a passion. Like, I cannot stand that. I can't stand the vibe, that whole, I need to be part of the show. No, I did not come to see you with your churned butter hat, you know, talking about I was cheering the Shield when he was John Moxley crap. Like, no. I came to watch the Rustlers, not your monkey behind on your cell phone looking cool with your escort girlfriend that you rented. Like, sit down.
Yeah, it's been kind of funny. Jeremy's been bitching to me about the NXT crowds. But it's one of those things that the Ring of Honor crowd is like what you're describing. Like, they are just so hateable all the time and need to be a part of the show. And honestly, like, as much as I want the WWE to cave to peer pressure more often with some of the heel face dynamic, ROH just does that way too often to not cave in. Or, no, they automatically cave into the fans, and things just, like, change without really making any sense at all.
Yeah, it's a thing where you, between a rock and a hard place, because a lot of criticism you get is kind of like, WWE doesn't listen to the fan base, so that's why they're kind of out of touch. But on the other hand, it's like, half the time the fans don't know what they want. And I always make the joke, like, if you push all the fan favorites, all the internet favorites the way they wanted to, everybody would be in the mid-card. Because everyone would always win. Like, you know, you can't talk about Braun Strowman needs, like, the whole thing is like, you know, Braun Strowman needs to get a push. Samoa Joe needs to get a push. They need to treat Finn Balor better. And, you know, what about Seth Rollins? Okay, so you got all these four guys. Well, which one's going to win? They can't all win at the same time. It's like, someone has to win, someone has to lose. And you get to the whole point where sometimes they want everybody to win. And it doesn't work that way. And probably it's before my time, because I know they made the NWA crowds were known for doing that, like in certain things. Definitely ECW was the first thing where it's like, this crowd is like, I'm part of the show crap. And that's one of the wrong lessons people kind of learn, because like the Impact Center, that was a thing when TNA used to do it. Definitely NXT has gotten bad like that. And then even some like crowds like, you know, Chicago, and I know Chicago, like some of those smarty towns, like the day after WrestleMania, like, oh yeah, we're gonna bring our beach ball out and chant your Champions League soccer chants because we're supposed to. Imagine you spent $300 and you're watching the damn beach ball instead of somebody wrestle. I want to stab somebody. Like, I know at this point it's like you kind of know what you're doing. That's why I don't even go to the Raw after Mania anymore, because it's like I want to see great matches. And it used to be a hot crowd and you got some probably great matches. And now it's like, oh, we have permission to act like dickheads.
Yeah, it's really kind of changed, because I went to a couple of Raws after Mania and it was great. But it's really kind of tipped the scale into the I don't care. Like, I didn't go the last time I went to WrestleMania. Oh, yeah, we went down to Dallas. I didn't go to the Raw afterwards. And I'm planning on hitting New Orleans again this coming year. And I have no, I don't want to go to that Raw on Monday. Like,
I
I'm
want to.
good. Even if I stay there, I'm good just not going to Raw.
I want to say Miami was the last post-Mania crowd where it was kind of like that balance where everybody's passionate getting in, but they still want to enjoy the show. Because I remember the New York show was the first year that kind of pissed me off. Like, that was the first year they were doing the chants and had the beach ball and all that. And then I
Okay.
remember we was in the thread and everybody saying, "Oh, this is awesome. Look at the crowd doing that." And I think everybody's calling me a curmudgeon because I'm like, this is not awesome. The crowd is chanting, "We are awesome." Like, what are we doing? They are not awesome because they're chanting for themselves. Like, this is trash. And I was like, oh, you being a stick in the mud. And everything. I specifically remember, like, New York was the first year that kind of turned me off. And it has not gotten better. I went to New Orleans. When we were in New Orleans, I went to that Raw. And, yeah, I remember that show. It was the stuff with Seth Rollins and Brock Lesnar was enjoyable. When
Right.
when Brock Lesnar lost his mind and almost murdered Michael Cole, he had five of his shoes fell off. Like, that was some hot stuff. When Paige made her first appearance, that was definitely cool. But I remember the stuff with the women's match. They chanting like, you suck, fill in the blank, like you suck your boyfriend, or you suck such and such, or you screw that. And I remember Natalya laughing it off, saying like, yeah, I'm married, I do that. I remember the Bellas not being pleased whatsoever. I definitely remember Randy Orton looking like he wanted to shoot somebody. Where he wanted to get somebody a finger. And it's kind of like, you out there busting your ass and the crowd's busy playing, volleyball with a beach ball. It's like, that's nah. Like, and now it's kind of like they play into it like, oh, it's Bizarro World and that's just
Oh.
how it is. So now it's like the crowd thing has a responsibility to do that. And
Yeah, and they
I'd rather avoid
oblige.
that.
The crowd definitely obliges it, like with the WWE acknowledging it and saying it's gonna happen, they're just like, okay. That's why it was actually kind of strange that Canada wasn't very much Bizarro World this last time that they went there.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like that's kind of like faded away because everybody does it now. I think the fact that between Brooklyn and Chicago is the two ones that stand out, especially Chicago. It's like if I hear one more CM Punk chant, I'm gonna lose my damn mind. Like, enough's enough, and like I get the whole thing, but it doesn't add to the show. It's like he's not there. He doesn't want to. If he wanted to be there, he'd be there because they would take him back. But he's not there. He doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, because the UFC would definitely get rid of him on top of that. Because he had a 3-fight contract and he had one fight, and his name has not even been close to mention for a second fight. When his next best appearance is on MTV's whatever the hell reality
The challenge,
the
Trolls versus
challenge.
Joes, hosted by the Miz, introduced that. Talk about life coming at you fast, where the Miz became CM Punk and CM Punk became the Miz. That guy, that has to be something. That has to be something. Like I just like CM Punk's doing fine financially. He's married to a beautiful woman. He's probably enjoying life. But I know it has to eat him alive sometimes when he watches some. Like between the fact where he could be having all these great matches with all these guys that wouldn't have got a chance 3, 4 years ago. And then
Oh.
the fact they see someone like The Miz basically living his life.
Yeah, that one's got to be a tough one to take in. Because, I mean, I guess I did joke that Punk wasn't getting the stuff done that he said he wanted to get done. But, man, yeah, he kind of picked the exact wrong time to go away.
Yeah.
Because, and I mean, it's definitely been something that we've kind of talked about in general on the show for a while now. Like, this is just a completely different WWE than even 2, 3 years ago.
It's no better time to be a small wrestler with talent than now. And
Oh,
at least
yeah.
with Daniel Bryan, his thing is he's injured, so he can't do it. But it's like you can just imagine the matches CM Punk could have both on Raw and SmackDown with all the talent. Like, star-wise, WWE not necessarily like the top of their ring, but as far as like ring work, wrestling skill, it's never been better. Like, yeah. The closest it might have been maybe been like 2001, 2002. It was like right when WCW and ECW just went out and like Brock Lesnar had just showed up, where you had basically like the best talent in the world all on the same show. But since, like, you look up and down the roster, like, the fact, we didn't even talk about NXT, the fact where, you know, you got Bobby Roode and Drew Galloway fighting for the title.
Yeah, two guys that have wrestled Bobby Roode for probably two decades now, and Drew Galloway, who really kind of just had too much put upon him in his first WWE run, and what I've seen from him since has been good stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, like, he kind of learned and has moved forward.
Yeah. You just think of the talent level on, like, NXT and Raw and SmackDown. It's like, yeah, you, CM Punk is like, I was wasting my time wrestling a meathead Ryback. And now, like, you could just imagine him and Finn Balor or Sami Zayn or Kevin Owens or, you know, anybody like Seth Rollins and everything like that. Yeah, keep him away from the big guys, but all those small guys, like, he could be having great matches right now, but it's just a timing thing. Like, I always make the joke that Ken Shamrock's biggest issue was he came at the wrong time. Like, had he come 3 years earlier or 3 years later, he'd have had a lot better career. Like, Ken Shamrock, especially, like, Ken Shamrock now would be a big deal, but Ken Shamrock, like, he debuted, like, 2002, 2003, and had a mouthpiece, like, post-Attitude Era, he'd have been great.
Yeah, so, I still remember his run fondly anyway.
Yeah, I do too. It's kind of like, I always stand out, it was like, him back-to-back weeks, he made Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart tap out. Like, they treated him like a big deal. And then it just happened where Triple H, like, he just got overshadowed, where him being a tough guy didn't matter as much as far as being, like, you're not going to out-tough Stone Cold Steve Austin, is basically what happened.
Oh,
and he wasn't as charismatic as, like, The Rock or Triple H. So it was like, once the Shawn Michaels generation went out the window, he was kind of short. Like, and he's not a cartoon character, and he kept getting hurt, too. That didn't help, so... Yeah, it's always about timing. Like, some people just run it, like, you know, wrong place. Like, Shelton Benjamin is perfect example, like, wrong place, wrong time, because it's nowhere in the world he should have been a bigger star than what he is. I still don't know if he's coming back. Like, the first thing was he was, then he got hurt, and now it's kind of, like, unknown. Like, if you ask him, he says no. If you ask other people, it's like, when maybe, if he wants to, he can. But it's like, there's no definite answer.
Hey, yeah, I actually kind of forgot about him, because I always figured that Curt Hawkins was going to get the boot about as soon as Benjamin was healthy again, but neither thing has happened at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of wild. I mean, I think Benjamin is another guy that would be able to have some good to great matches with some people now, even though he's a bit older at this point.
I mean, he can still wrestle. He can still go. And, like, I mean, it's funny where it's kind of stereotypical. You can easily see a feud with him versus Jason Jordan. Like, you know, he might be a daddy, but he was my daddy first type thing. And didn't have that. And, you know, Vince likes having black people feud just because they're black. So that could definitely be a thing. And I guess before you wrap, speaking of feuds and things, the Nakamura Jinder Mahal thing is so weird.
Oh.
Like, because Jinder Mahal's whole thing has been, you don't like me because I'm a foreigner, and I look different, and I speak different. That works when you're wrestling against Randy Orton and John Cena. It don't work when you wrestle against Nakamura. Like, that whole promo, like, you know, Nakamura came out like, you know, I know you're here to celebrate India's Independence Day. I'm here to celebrate, you know, our Japanese holiday of showing respect for all the people lost in war. How can you boo that? Like, he comes out and says that, And just think of the fact where you have an Indian wrestler and a Japanese wrestler cutting promos showing Pride in the Nation, and Hartford's cheering. Like, and it's basically like, you know, Nakamura say, you know, you respect your thing, I respect mine, in America, I'm going to beat you at SummerSlam. That's it. Like, Ginger can't use a xenophobe thing. It's like, you know, you're fighting a Japanese guy.
Well, and that's, I think I said that last week or the week before. I'm like, oh, with Nakamura as the challenger, he can't do it. And he's still trying to do it. It's just like, you need to find another avenue of attack here, pal.
Yeah, like, just, you know, talking about, oh, they're booing me because I'm brown and I'm from India and I speak funny. Like, Nakamura looks funny and talks like a drunk Michael Jackson. So, that's not helping you anymore. Like, he's not going to, like, you know, Randy Orton looks like he can be on the cover of the Daily Stormer. Nakamura doesn't. So you can't use that whole line again, like, you know, you only like me, you don't like me because I don't look like you. Nakamura don't look like them neither, and they like him. So I'm wondering, like, I could easily see that match, like, Nakamura just running through him in, like, a minute.
Oh. Like, they have not done a good job because, I mean, even going back then, I know that we talked about Baron Corbin some, but Mahal has had his ass kicked twice in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. And it's weird because up until then, he was just beating everybody. Like, he was beating Randy Orton through hook and crook, but he was still beating them. When he was wrestling there, everybody else, he was just dogging them. Like, and it was weird because you weren't used to heel champions just rolling over people. And he was just rolling over, like, all those mid-card, like, Ty Dillingers and whoever, and, like, the Sami Zayns. He was just beating them, like, 3-4 minutes clean. And it's like, wow, they're treating a heel champion like a heel. They treat him like they should have treated him before he won the title. And then he loses to Randy Orton. I guess to set up Randy Orton versus Rusev. And then he has the match with John Cena to set that all up. And it's like, yeah, I know people like Jinder Mahal. And I know, like, the hipster crowd, like, was cheering like that. It would be a damn riot if he beat Nakamura in Brooklyn. Oh. Like, it ain't no way. I don't see any way that, like, that could work and that not get crapped on.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't really blame the crowd too much. Like, Mahal just still seems like he's in a spot that he shouldn't really be in. You know, I think he needs a little more build up. And to have him jump up to world champ was just such an unbelievable jump.
Yeah. Yeah. The jump didn't bother me as much as, because people compare it with the JBL thing. And there's, like, because, like, JBL wasn't, like, JBL was a name, but he was never, like, a big deal. And then they decided he was a big deal. And his whole thing was not the fact that that happened, it's that he beat somebody so popular. Like, he beat Eddie Guerrero, and everybody loved Eddie Guerrero. So then they have, and then it's kind of like he's feuding with Eddie Guerrero, he's feuding with The Undertaker, he's feuding with Booker T, all these beloved people that, you know, they wanted more than JBL to have. Like, JBL finally got his footwork. Eventually, it's kind of like, you know, and then by the time he got that, he was feuding with John Cena. And that was kind of like when John Cena just started to, like, not be the universally beloved. Because, like, up until they feuded, everybody loved John Cena, more or less. And then it kind of started when he feuded with JBL. And it definitely kicked in when he start interacting with Christian to the point where they had to put Chris Jericho in that match to have somebody get booed because Christian was getting cheered over John Cena. So Mahal's biggest issue is, like, it was fine where I could cheer him over Randy Orton because the hell are Randy Orton? Like,
right.
Like, Randy Orton was basically a terrorist. Like, if I gotta go and come to his house or go to his country or anything like that, like, I'll burn down a building and get a title match. Like, I'm not cheering this jerk. Like, he sounds like a criminal. So that it's easy to cheer that. And, like, but they built Nakamura as, like, the most important person on SmackDown. And he is somebody where they're pushing him, and the smart crowd loves him.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're kind of stuck with that. It's like when you're getting the push, like, it's the whole thing, like, when everyone loves you, it's like that Braun Strowman thing where you're getting this big-time push and no one has a problem with it. You do not want to be on those train tracks.
Yeah, that's why, and you know, it's kind of funny, I guess, to go back to that thing that we started the show with, Baron Corbin losing. That was definitely one of those things to me that was looming over SummerSlam. It seemed like a perfect time for Nakamura to win it, crowd goes bonkers, and then you have Baron Corbin come in, cash in on Nakamura, who's drained from the match. And he goes over, and everyone really hates Corbin.
Yeah, and it would have worked.
But that is off the table.
A feud anyway. Yeah, like, they already had history anyway, and I assumed that's what was going to happen. I was thinking the same thing. So now it's like, okay, Nakamura just wins. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and I could see that him blitzing like Jinder Mahal. Because one thing they've shown, especially recently, like, they don't have an issue with matches being short, especially at SummerSlam. And they don't have issues with, like, having one-sided title matches. I still remember Brock just steamrolling John Cena. Like,
yeah.
That was, and, you know, you can have, and then, like, Goldberg doing what he did for, like, multiple pay-per-views. So, I can easily see, like, Nakamura come in, have the great entrance, hit Jinder like two moves, pin him with the Kinshasa, and that be it. And it's like, yeah, you know.
That match is not going to be the main event of the card.
No.
So you can do something like that to boot. Because I think people would be okay, like, I think, and we had talked about it, some combination of us had talked about it previously, the Brock Lesnar-Goldberg match being that quick, that's one thing. A Jinder Mahal, Shinsuke Nakamura title change. I'm not sure the crowd's going to be okay with that match ending the card that quickly.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, one, normally when it's SummerSlam, Brock Lesnar tends to be in the last match at SummerSlam anyway. It's kind of like, that's become his pay-per-view. Like, even last year, they had two title matches, but the main event was Brock and Randy Orton. You tend to kind of forget that when he almost murdered Randy Orton for them getting a damn concussion. Like, yeah. So, and then you got those four big guys. It's kind of like, I'm just wondering, it's 4 hours. You've already had two of those matches, like, Monday. Like, which match gets what time, what shows on the pre-show. Like, you got to, and this kind of, it is a lot of matches. You know, you got the, we didn't even talk about, like, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens with Shane McMahon. Like, that's going to be a big deal because it's those two, and then Shane McMahon's a big deal with that. You got both the women's matches. You have both tag matches. You got John Cena, Baron Corbin. You got Demon Balor, because he hit the select button when he selected them, like the tech screen. So his uniform changes. You got him versus Bray Wyatt. You got, you know, the world title match on both shows. You got the women title match on both shows. And, of course, you know, Big Show versus Big Cass. And we're probably missing stuff. Like, is The Miz defending the title?
I'm not sure if him and Jason Jordan will be on for the title or not, because that's definitely been something the last couple of weeks. You know, feud, you know, because although it also could just be a 6-man tag match involving the Hardys too.
Yeah.
Just to get people on the pay-per-view. Like, it doesn't seem like that's one of those matches that, if you do want to give Jason Jordan the title, God forbid, that SummerSlam does not seem like the time to do that. Although, then that's the other problem is that it's another SmackDown pay-per-view after this one, so Raw still has a while to go, and I'm not sure I'm ready for Jason Jordan to carry mic time for that long either.
it's that's I don't know. It's like they're trying, but it's just it's like the crowd wasn't into it, and they're not going to be into it. And like Jason Jordan, he's not charismatic enough to pull that off. It's not the race thing never bothered me. I know people said, "Oh, Chad Gable should have did it." I'm like, Chad Gable was better than Jason Jordan, but people weren't saying that's the reason. They were saying it's kind of like it didn't. I couldn't imagine Jason Jordan being Kurt Angle's son. It's like you can't like you haven't seen Kurt Angle like has dated certain people in real life. So is it that hard to believe that that could have happened in college? Like I'm sure there might have been a undergrad at Clarion wherever he went to. So, but no, it's just like
Oof, yeah.
it's kind of it's like the whole push is like it's and it's and the worst part is Kurt Angle's a baby face and Jason Jordan's a baby face, and your dad can't be the boss. I mean, it just looks wrong. Like, I
Oh.
remember the David San Martino stuff. With, like, whenever they had the second generation, when the first generation guy was still around in charge, it always looked weird. And the only time it didn't look weird was Dustin Rhodes, for whatever reason. Like, he's the only one that kind of, like, got away, he got away with doing that. Everybody else is like, this is crap.
Yeah, and I mean it's something that it's we did talk a little bit about Big Cass having all the good talking points about Enzo. The Miz kind of has something of legitimate gripes that even the crowd could get behind. Just because Jordan hasn't really established himself at all.
And it's
And
like
that does
that.
not help your feud at all. When you're playing defense, when you should be playing offense, it's not a good showing for the baby face.
And that's how I always go. It's like, oh, what you gonna do, run to your dad? Like it was Emma thing. Oh, maybe if I date your son, I can get a title match. I mean, it's like, it's like what? You don't have a defensive method. Like it's sexist as hell, but it's truth behind that. It's like, oh, Jason Jordan, all of a sudden now he's getting matches, and like he's going to get a title shot. He's getting this, and that. It's like, who did he beat? It's like, it's a conflict of interest, and it's hard to do conflict of interest and beat a hero. Like it's,
Oh.
you can do it. That's why normally it's heel gentleman. It's like imagine if Teddy Long had a nephew and kept getting like a tag match on SmackDown
Holla,
every week. Like.
holla, holla.
It would kind of look kind of weird. Like, this seemed unfair, and you couldn't tell the heels they were lying because they'd be telling the truth. Because it does seem a bit unfair. Like he hasn't earned it, and I got the feeling like sooner or later either Jason Jordan's gonna turn heel or Stephanie McMahon's gonna come back and kind of put like a kibosh on this. So it's like which will be ironic as hell. Stephanie McMahon putting an end to nepotism on Monday Night Raw. What I could easily see them doing that because it's funny where even like SmackDown is you still have Daniel Bryan and Shane there because they're like they're both baby faces, they work together, so it fits. You haven't seen Steph since Kurt Angle's been there.
Oh, right. And honestly, like, don't know why they thought that dynamic worked with Mick Foley, but having Mick Foley isolated by himself might have improved their show during that time period. And Angle pretty much does, outside of being dogged for the Jason Jordan stuff, rightfully so. He's pretty much just on there to declare matches and be a little bit of a go-between between some of the wrestlers talking. And so, I mean, they've used him kind of at the bare minimum, and it's right where a GM should be used.
And it's funny where people like Kurt Angle. He's okay in that role. He's not necessarily great, but it's kind of like, he has a sly sense of humor. He plays the whole, like, I'm stern sometimes. Sometimes I kind of befuddle. sometimes exasperating, because you can tell it's like he gets frustrated whenever it's like Brock Lesnar stuff, like, oh, I gotta get security again.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any problem like clowning like The Miz, because that's fun, because like, you know, The Miz not gonna do anything to him. And then it's always funny when he interacts with Brock Lesnar, because it's kind of like Kurt Angle was the one guy that could like beat Brock Lesnar in a clean fight, and it seemed realistic. So to see him now kind of be like, you know, I ain't about this life anymore. It's weird, where it's like, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like Kurt Angle's, like, it's funny when they treat Kurt Angle now like, you know, he's just a guy that's a Hall of Famer, not this badass Olympian. Because, like, Kurt Angle's old, but it hasn't been that long ago when he was wrestling, like, what, last year? Or 2 years ago, definitely.
Yeah,
so
it, went, yeah, like, it hasn't been that
like
long.
5 or 6 years, but they treat him like, you know,
he's been retired like for a decade. yeah, I mean, they really do. And I guess that's been good. Like, there was some speculation him and Joe would go again, but honestly, I think they've kind of baited that hook enough at this point that I don't think they're actually going there ever, which is probably in Kurt Angle's best health interest.
Yeah, and it's just funny just seeing that, like, seeing Brock Lesnar chump out Kurt Angle, considering their history, is just, because Brock Lesnar is just perfect of being a bully. And, like, and I've always said, I would never mess with somebody that has white eyebrows, because I've seen too many kung fu movies. And I know that never ends well. Like, most blonde people just have blonde hair, and everything else is dark hair. Brock Lesnar has all his hair is blonde. Like, his eyebrows are white. That's normally a villain. Like, heroes don't have that type of hair. And so I would leave it alone. But no, I'm definitely looking forward to SummerSlam. It's a lot of matches. I don't know if it's going to be long or too long. I'm definitely looking forward to NXT, because I wonder if this is when Asuka loses, because she hasn't lost in like a year and some change.
Yeah, that one's pretty crazy. I mean, they've done a good job of that, and I really didn't think that Ember Moon had enough time, honestly, to be properly built up as, you know, like, the threat to Asuka. And even though I've kind of missed some of that build-up still, with the hodgepodge of NXTs I've watched now, it seems like she's in a better spot now to actually capture that victory.
Yeah, and they built her as like somebody good enough to hang and maybe beat her, and that's the first time since, like, I guess Ruby, what's her name, the girl from Insanity.
Oh, Nikki Cross.
Yeah, Nikki Cross, like, you know, it's the first one since Nikki Cross, because even, like, it's basically been, like, Bailey, Nikki Cross, and the Ember Moon, because she's dogged everybody else, kinda, like, kind of easily, and I'm wondering, what I want to say is, had the Mae Young Classic not been a thing, I would have picked Ember Moon. I'm thinking Kairi Sane is going to be the one that beats Asuka if anyone beats her, the new Japanese girl they signed. The one with the elbow from heaven, as I like to call it. Like, I can, and because she can hang with Asuka. Like, she's a great wrestler. I remember seeing her one match when she was in Lucha Underground, and she can wrestle her ass off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have not seen her at all. I love the costume and the whole gimmick she's got going on.
Yeah, the whole pirate thing with the, she come out with the yacht wheel is just funny. It's like, oh, it's, because it's kind of like, it's a stereotypical thing, but, I mean, she plays it straight, and it's adorable, but then, that's the most, I just want to say, before we go, that's the most beautiful elbow drop I've seen in my life. No offense to the Macho Man Randy Savage, like, her elbow drop is a, to the point where enough people got mad that they were going to take away from her, that they let her keep the move, and then hyped it up on WWE.com. Cause that used to be, cause they're not gonna let her do it because Bayley does it, and it is like Bayley's elbow is trash compared to hers. Like, her elbow, it's like you had the Rock, no, don't let him do the Rock Bottom.
Oh,
because Bray Wyatt does it. It's like, No, that's yeah. So I'm looking forward to the Mae Young Classic. It's amazing that we live in a world where you have all these women being treated seriously, and you're gonna have a women's tournament, and people look forward to it. So
yeah,
and I'll say this about wrestling, and we normally talk about WWE, but it's like all this other great wrestling. I know I have friends that watch New Japan, so I watch it. You got ROH and PWG. If you can't find a show that you don't like, then you're looking in the wrong place. It's way too much wrestling these days, and it's so much easier to watch it now. You really don't have any excuses anymore.
Yep. The only excuse is you don't want to pony up a whopping $10 or less than that per month to watch said content. So, I'm at DeFrango11. That's Shaw Farm D. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes if you would please. And with that, I will give Shahid the floor to send us out.
For Kevin DeFrango, I'm Shahid Abdulhadi, and make sure you take a nap before you watch SummerSlam. We are out.